Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Previously on The Storyteller, Naked Villainy, Kit Harrison claims he had no hold over his ex-wife.
After her divorce, she was entirely free to do whatever she liked.
However, he did believe she was working as a prostitute.
I was deeply concerned about her welfare because the risks of contracting some unpleasant disease are relatively high.
And the jury hears the bizarre explanation as to why his sperm was found on Brenda's bedding, years after he claimed they'd last had sex.
Say there are more than 50 sheets, they're not going to be washed in a short space of time.
It's taken 45 years to bring a killer to court. And for the first time in UK history, you'll hear the full murder trial and witness justice being done. It was a brutal murder of a brilliant woman who was a rising star in genetic research.
It would now be almost like a script from Morse. The investigators swarming over the dreaming spires of university land.
There was kind of palpable feeling of evil in the air.
I was told it was just a mass of blood and hair.
2 decades on from confronting evil.
Did you kill your ex-wife, Brenda Page?
Evil is being confronted by the law.
Did you kill her?
No.
She knew it was coming.
He said he was going to kill her.
If he killed her, he would do it so that nobody would know.
Will his true nature be unmasked?
Are you familiar with the tale of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde?
And can Brenda's own words help secure her killer's fate?
A letter of a death foretold.
This is The Storyteller, Naked Villainy, written, produced and edited by me, Isla Traquair. It's day 8 and Kit Harrison's voice has been lulling the courtroom into an almost trance, telling stories of his childhood, meeting his wife, storms in teacups, dizzy spells. His unusual cadence, his repetition of the question he'd just been asked, included at the start of each answer, made him sound reasonable, plausible. The odd bit of self-deprecation thrown in just added to it. Until you listened to the content. If what he said was true, everyone else must be lying. We ended the last episode on his claim of how his sperm got onto the bloodied bedsheets. Even with the soothing storytelling, we were suddenly on high alert to hear the full explanation. A story which meanders down a path of bizarre and even includes a mention of Charles Dickens. We'll pick up with Casey, Brian McConaughey, asking him to expand.
Can we maybe just take that a little bit more slowly? So far as the bedding is concerned, you said, I think, that Brenda Page had a significant quantity.
She did.
Which was why?
Because her mother worked as a housekeeper at a very renowned hotel in Ipswich called the Great White Horse Hotel, which is mentioned by Charles Dickens in the Pickwick Papers.
And how did that fact result in Brenda Page having a significant quantity of bedding?
Charles Forter bought the hotel in the early 1970s and decided that he wanted to replace all the bed linen. So there were hundreds of sheets and pillowcases which were suddenly not wanted any longer, and the housekeeper had to get rid of them.
And so far as getting rid of them is concerned, do you know whether any of them found their way into Brenda Page's hands?
A large number of them got into Brenda Page's hands, and she used them all around the house to cover up furniture and they had the monogram of the Great White Horse Hotel at the top.
And insofar as you and she were concerned, you've explained, I think, that you were, during at least part of your marriage, you were trying to have children.
Yes.
And you would be having marital relations for that purpose, obviously.
Yes.
And in relation to anything found on the bedding at 13 Allen Street, how do you think that got there?
Marital relations prior to 1976.
And the bedding having gone from Mile End Place to Allen Street.
That's right.
By the time of the 13th or 14th of July, had there been any particular incidents between you and Brenda Page which had caused a change in the relationship between you?
Brenda Page took exception to the fact that I had asked my American girlfriend, Kathy Horton, to attend my graduation. And I discussed that with Brenda Page well in advance. And Kathy Horton, who had typed up my doctoral thesis, I felt needed a thank you to show how much I appreciated the help that she had given me.
So what happened so far as the graduation was concerned?
Brenda Page wrote me a poisonous letter saying that she never wanted to see me again and she felt terribly badly treated. And yet that was something that we'd discussed more than 6 weeks previously.
And when approximately did you receive that letter?
I think at the end of June. She actually paid Kathy Horton and me a visit where she knocked on the front door, and at my graduation, one has to shake hands with all sorts of people, and that's one of the best ways of catching a dose of flu. And so for a fortnight, I was confined to bed with a temperature of 104, and in the middle of being nursed by Kathy Horton back to health from a serious bout of flu, Brenda Page, in a fury, came and bashed on the front door of 12 Mile End Place, requiring admittance, and dashed upstairs and berated me in bed at all my infidelity, as she said, in inviting somebody from the United States to my graduation instead of her.
And so far as timing is concerned, was that June of 1978?
That was June, and after my graduation, I'd met Brenda Page in the car park, and things seemed to have died down. I wrote her a very moderate letter saying how sad I was that things had come to such a pass that it really wasn't necessary at all. We'd discussed well in advance that this was going to happen, and she shouldn't have been upset in any way.
You've explained that you met her in the car park at Forrester Hill, and subsequent to that, you attended at Allen Street.
Yes.
After that attendance at Allen Street, was there any problem, so far as you were aware, between you and Brenda Page?
None at all.
Was there anything which caused you to be so angry that you decided you were going to attack her?
I wasn't angry in any way throughout the whole of this unnecessary ruckus. Brenda Page got upset easily by all sorts of trivial things, which I simply didn't understand. And on this occasion, because I simply didn't understand, I asked her PhD student, Jessie Watt.
I don't want you to tell me what anybody else said, OK?
I'm so sorry.
But insofar as after the haircut event was concerned, when you left Allen Street that night, as far as you were concerned, what was the state of the relationship between you?
Amicable.
On the late evening of the 13th of July into the early hours of the 14th of July, did you climb into Brenda Page's house?
I did not.
Did you hide somewhere and wait for her?
Certainly not.
Did you attack her?
No, I did not.
Did you kill her?
No.
That was it. The denial with a simple no to the direct question, did you kill her? The court adjourned for a brief break, and just as well because Advocate Depute Alec Prentice went for the jugular right from the start.
Dr. Harrison, are you familiar with the tale of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde?
I am.
Dr. Jekyll, a well-respected and intelligent scientist who had a darker alter ego who didn't accept responsibility for his crimes and ways. That was the tale, wasn't it?
That was the tale.
That description sums you up very well, doesn't it?
Not at all.
On the one hand, you can be a kind and considerate man, but on other occasions, a violent and aggressive man.
I'm a kind and considerate man.
At all times.
Most people have their variations, but at all times.
Do you agree that you are a man who is prepared to defy the law?
Never.
You defied the law when you breached the terms of the interdict granted on the 16th of January 1978 when you visited Brenda Page. Is that not true?
I only visited Brenda Page when she invited me.
The interdict prevented you from contacting her or visiting her, whether she invited it or not.
Then I misunderstood it.
You have a violent temper which caused Brenda to be afraid. Is that not so?
No.
You had a violent temper which causes... Sorry, I'll say that again. You have a violent temper which in the past caused rages of which Brenda was afraid. Is that not true?
It is not.
Could you have before you, please, Crown Production number 49? Do you recognise that as a letter written by you?
I do.
And is it dated the 11th of February, 1978?
It is.
Is it in your handwriting?
I think so.
Is the address given a place near Basingstoke?
It is.
Is that where you were residing at the time of this letter?
I was.
Is it addressed to Brenda?
It is.
Is this the moderate letter you referred to when you wrote to her?
No.
No. But do you recognise it as a letter to Brenda in your handwriting?
It is in my handwriting.
Have you seen this letter recently?
No.
Do you want to take a moment just to look at it? And I'll go to certain parts of it.
Dr. Harrison took quite some time to read it. It hadn't yet been put on the screen, so we waited with bated breath to find out its contents.
Thank you.
Do you remember the letter now, having seen it?
I do.
Could you turn to the second page? And could we put the second page on the screen? Now, do you see a paragraph there that begins, "If only I..."
I'm with you.
Could you read that out for us, please?
If only I could share my life with someone who not only understood this, but was prepared to be gentle and sympathetic with my frozen stupidity, the cure would have been complete. I should be a whole person for the first time since the age of about 11. It is bottling things up that causes my acute inner griefs, and it is that conflict between the need to tell and be healed in a lover's arms and the shame which makes me keep my failures to myself, that causes those rages of which you were afraid.
Could you repeat that last sentence, please? That causes?
That causes those rages of which you were afraid.
Thank you. And then complete the paragraph for us, please.
Soothed and whole, I should be very even-tempered. I believe my real nature is as sunny as yours, but mine has been soured by being locked up like a bull in a small backyard for far too many years.
Thank you. Take that off now. Do you agree that you had rages of which Brenda Page was afraid?
One has, as a child, model snow storms in a bottle, and if you shake the bottle, you'll see the storm. Rages can be internal.
Do you agree that you had rages of which Brenda Page was afraid?
If you're looking through a glass ball and see the snowstorm, then you think, what is going on?
Do you agree that you had rages of which Brenda Page was afraid?
I don't know.
Hey there, True Crime Podcast fans. It's Patrick and Jillian from True Crime Obsessed.
Each week on TCO, we recap a true crime documentary everyone's talking about, and we do it with heart, sass, and just the right amount of humor.
So if you like the kind of podcast where two good friends chat about a case in a thoughtful way that centers the victims, you really got to check us out.
Yeah, we cover the well-known cases that you hear about in the news and the underreported cases that desperately need more attention.
For almost 9 years, we've been one of the most popular true crime podcasts out there.
We have over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, and our brand new YouTube channel has over 50,000 subscribers watching our full-length video episodes too.
So find and subscribe True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.
Much like the comments to the police comparing his temper to the snow in Good King Wenceslas, yet another odd response to a direct question which had to be asked three times before the advocate depute received a satisfactory response.
Did you love Brenda Page?
I did.
Did you maintain that love?
I did.
Even after separation?
I thought that we were going our separate ways.
If you loved her, why did you throw a cup of tea at her?
I never did. I've never thrown a cup of tea at anybody in my entire life.
How many times was Brenda Page in hospital?
As far as I know, she was only in hospital a single time when she had a dizzy spell and we didn't know what had happened.
That was the only occasion, is that right?
I think so.
What did you want with her on the 12th of July 1978 when you attended at her flat with a fish supper?
Brenda Page had offered to give me a haircut in return for taking her to the garage.
She didn't let you in straight away, did she?
She may have been in the bathroom, I don't know.
Is it your position that once you parted company, and certainly after the divorce, Brenda Page's life was hers, and hers to live as she chose?
Entirely.
Without you having any effect upon it, is that correct?
Absolutely.
And when you learned of her work at the escort agency, what was your thought on that?
I was sorry that she was found the need to be doing that.
Did you refer to it as her whoring?
I really don't know at this juncture.
Did you accuse her of being a prostitute?
No, I don't think so.
Could you have before you, please, Crown Production 64? Do you recognise that as a letter? If you look at the second page, signed off Brenda, do you see that?
Yes.
Do you recognise that as Brenda's writing?
It is.
It is. And if you look at the first page, and we'll put this on the screen in a moment, but do you see the second paragraph says, you could have made it possible for me to attend your graduation and put on an after celebration, which I had planned as a surprise. Do you see that sentence?
I do.
Do you recall receiving this letter?
I do.
Yeah. Could we put the letter on the screen, please? Although the letter's not dated, it's obvious that the graduation has taken place. Is that correct?
It seems so.
And you can see at the top it's headed 13 Allen Street, Aberdeen.
It is.
That? Is that right?
That is right.
Does it say this? Dear Kit, you do nothing but hurt me. Let me down and make a fool of me. You are not getting the chance to do it anymore. I don't have to put up with that kind of mental torture or any ridicule. I don't wish to see you ever again. If you do bother me by phone or by calling or by any other Kit-type invention, I will call on the interdict at once. Does it say that?
It does.
And then it goes on. You could have made it possible for me to attend your graduation and put on an after celebration, which I had planned as a surprise. You could easily have dealt with the complications if you had really wanted me there. I encouraged all these things so as not to influence you in any way, so that you could make up your own mind. Is winning your legal battle more important than getting me back? Is that what it says?
What it is trying to say is there was a legal battle. Well,
first of all, I will let you answer that, but is that what it says? Have I read that accurately?
I think you have.
Right, thank you. I'll come back to the content in a moment. Could you turn over the page, please, to the second page? And do you see at the top, three lines down, does it say, I will write to Edwards, withdrawing my connection with your section of the teaching so that we will not be forced together over that. My section is well away from yours in the second term. Does the name Edwards mean anything to you?
Department of Cell Biology.
I'm sorry, could you say that again?
The Department of Cell Biology.
Yes.
In Robert Gordon's.
Okay. Does the next sentence say this? In spite of what you constantly accuse, I am no prostitute. I, except with you, and that with an original slant of me paying you, I had thought I had put up enough preventative measures against being used, but I was wrong again. Does it say that in the letter?
It says that, but it's not accurate.
Does it go on? Well, get on with the lies and storytelling. I want no part of the dishonesty with which you surround your life. Forgive my stupidity. I had thought that maybe things could change for us. Just get out of my life and stay out. Signed, Brenda. Is that what it says?
It is.
And that was accurately reflective of her attitude towards you, was it not?
No, it's the mirror opposite.
You say you were kind and considerate at all times, and these allegations are just false. Is that correct?
You have to understand the context.
But is that your position, that what is said in this letter is false?
It's a storm in a teacup.
Is it false?
Yes.
Were you not obsessed with her work as an escort?
Not in any way.
Are you not someone who was not prepared to see Brenda Page with another man?
It didn't concern me in the slightest. We were divorced at this period, and what she did as a woman was entirely her affair.
But the truth is it not, that you could not stand the thought of her being with another man?
No, that's not the case at all.
And you followed her in her car when she went out in her car?
I never followed her on any occasion.
And you reached an uncontrollable rage with her escort work, is that not so?
It's absolutely not so.
I'd like to go to the matter of the sheets. You've told the members of the jury that your assessment was that Brenda Page had some 50 sheets in her flat, is that correct?
At least.
That's what I was going to ask you. Do you mean that literally 50 sheets, at least?
At least.
So more than 50 sheets?
I would reckon so. Yeah. I couldn't know for certain, but when she lived at Mile End Place, she had more.
How many times were you in her flat at Allen Street?
One time to feed the cats, one time when she had invited me to have my hair cut, and perhaps one other occasion when we went for a picnic in the back garden, plus a dinner where she had invited me.
So a few times?
I reckon that's about four times in all.
Right. As a consequence, you would be reasonably familiar with the layout of the flat. Is that right?
Not at all.
Not at all, you see. Could we have production 138, the book of photographs, on the screen, and photograph number one? Do you recognise photograph number one as a photograph of 13 Allen Street?
I do.
I'm sorry?
Yes.
Yes. And photograph number two is the back green and also shows the back of the property. That will appear in a moment. Thank you.
We had a picnic there.
Yes. You had a picnic somewhere in the grass area, is that correct?
That's an old-fashioned Aberdeen drying green with grass in the middle.
Yes. And your picnic, was it on the grass?
Yes.
Yes. And there's an extension there which has a window looking onto the back green, is that correct?
There is.
Yeah. Now, you recognise that as the living area and kitchen area?
Yes.
It's quite a small flat, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. And photograph number eight, please. It's just another view. Again, we can see there are some cupboard storage.
There appears to be.
Yes. Yeah. Photograph 13, please. Now, that's the room in which we know Brenda was found, but you can see the bed occupies most of the room, is that correct?
That appears to be a hotel sheet over a bed.
But we've heard that is the room in which Brenda Page was found, so that's the room in the extension, or before the extension. And really what I'm asking you, do you agree that from the photograph, the bed occupies most of the space of the room?
I can't judge that because we've got no perspective at the front.
All right. But so far as what is shown in the image, we can see the walls to the right and to the left, and the bed intrudes, it appears, in the doorway. Do you agree?
It may well be.
Well, you look at the photograph. Do you agree?
I can't judge the perspective on that.
All right. That's the extension, and do you agree? From the photograph, it doesn't appear to be a very large room.
I'm unable to say whether that's the same room or not. Is that the same room? I think not.
It's not the same room.
No.
But do you agree that from the photograph, and bearing in mind the qualifications which you point out, that appears to be a relatively small room. Do you agree?
Again, I can say nothing about that because of the perspective. I don't know how that fits into the general thing. It doesn't look like a very big room, no.
Advocate Deputy Alec Prentice was trying to get Kit to confirm the flat was very small, with little storage for a vast amount of sheets. Kit Harrison, meanwhile, just wanted to point out the sheet on the bed was from the hotel collection Brenda was gifted by her mother.
If the separation between yourself and Brenda Page was amicable after the divorce, can you think of any reason why it would be necessary for Brenda Page to seek and obtain an interdict against you?
She had already received an interim interdict in October 77, long before all of these events.
Yes. What was the need for that, bearing in mind the divorce occurred in October 1977?
She wanted a warm bubble around her new boyfriend and her affair.
But if you were not pestering her or contacting her, there would be no need for an interdict, would there?
I wasn't either bothering her or pestering her at that time. She wanted to make sure that that couldn't possibly happen.
Did you give her any reason to think it might happen?
None at all.
So there would be no reason at all, on your explanation, for Brenda Page to go to a court and seek such an order?
None whatsoever. At that time, I was sharing my house with Kathy Horton and writing my doctoral thesis and nothing more.
The truth is, you drove to the treetops on the night of 13th July 1978, didn't you?
I never drove to the treetops. I didn't know where the treetops was. I'd never known of the existence of the Treetops Hotel until it shut down this year.
Just for context, the Treetops Hotel was on a road that would be hard to avoid if you lived in Aberdeen. It's large, it was well known, so this is extremely hard to believe that he was unaware of its existence.
Your car was spotted there, was it not?
No, it wasn't.
You were the person Dennis Burt saw in Brenda Page's flat at around 11:30, weren't you?
What Dennis Burt says, that he saw Brenda Page in the flat.
No. Dennis Burt thought Brenda Page would be in the flat. He saw a person. That person was you.
That person was not me.
On the morning, that is the 14th of July 1978, the day on which Brenda Page was found dead, you went to Edinburgh for a number of reasons, but they included buying a new pair of shoes. Is that correct?
No, the only reason for my going to Edinburgh was to return library books, and I took the opportunity of doing some shopping, which I hadn't been able to do for months and years beforehand.
A pair of shoes?
I had bought a pair of shoes in Aberdeen, which were extremely uncomfortable, for my graduation, and I wanted to replace those, that's all.
So you replaced the shoes that you had with a new pair, is that correct?
No, I didn't. I thought there's no point in trying on a new pair of shoes and finding at the end of my walk to Teviot Place that they're just as uncomfortable as the first lot.
You bought shoes that day, though, is that correct?
That is correct.
Right. So you bought a new pair of shoes in Edinburgh,
yes,
on the 14th of July 1978.
Yes.
Did you wear them?
I did.
So you replaced the shoes you were wearing, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. You also took the opportunity of replacing your watch, is that right?
That was a watch which I'd broken in 1974 when falling down the stairs in Forrester Hill.
That watch, I suggest, was damaged when you attacked Brenda Page on 13th or 14th July 1978?
It most emphatically was not.
And the watch strap for that you put in your fire grate?
I didn't. I took the watch strap off the watch in 1974 so as to be able to send back the watch to Timex for a repair.
Why did you put it in the fire grate?
I didn't. I put it on the mantle above the fireplace, and it had simply fallen off, and I hadn't noticed.
How would it fall into the fire grate?
I can't tell you. I don't think it had fallen into the fire grate. I think it had fallen into the hearth and was concealed by a brass fender, which concealed the fact that there was a watch strap lying under it.
The truth is, you just reached breaking point on the 13th and 14th of July, 1978. Is that not right?
It's not right at all. Brenda Page had really issued an apology for her very intemperate letter when she came up to me and congratulated me in the car park in Forester Hill and said, "Can you give me a lift to Holland Street Garage?" And thereafter she said, "Come round and have a haircut."
You spotted her in the Treetops Hotel that night, the 13th.
I've never been to the Treetops Hotel. I didn't know where the Treetops Hotel was, and I first heard of the existence of the Treetops Hotel when it closed this year.
You entered her flat via the window in the extension. Is that right?
It is not right. Someone with a broken left hand is really somebody who is one-handed. I'm not capable of all the acrobatics which Thomas Gorman carried out.
And you remained in the flat awaiting Brenda Page's return, didn't you?
I couldn't possibly have done any such thing.
And the rage of which Brenda Page was so afraid came into effect and you brutally murdered her, didn't you?
Nothing of the kind, no.
Thank you.
Short and to the point, the cross-examination was over. But with the introduction of the letter, a re-examination was a certainty. In the next episode of The Storyteller Naked Villainy, more of Kit's exposing letter is read to the court.
The wretched spiritual pygmy that I am at present.
Brenda's upset over his behaviour.
The most disgusting flaunting of a sexual bonanza in front of my staff that you could have thought up.
And the final insult.
Who was telling lies in storytelling?
Brenda Page.
If you've enjoyed this episode, please rate and review, as it makes a huge difference to guiding people to hearing this important story. This is an entirely independent production and your support is greatly appreciated. And if you want to hear exclusive interviews, longer episodes and insights, please head to the Patreon. The link is in the show notes. Thank you again for listening. This is a piece of history and you are for the first time in this format witnessing justice being done.
True Crime Podcast fans, it's Patrick and Jillian from True Crime Obsessed.
Each week on TCO, we recap a true crime documentary everyone's talking about, and we do it with heart, sass, and just the right amount of humor.
So if you like the kind of podcast where two good friends chat about a case in a thoughtful way that centers the victims, you really gotta check us out.
Yeah, we cover the well-known cases that you hear about in the news and the underreported cases that desperately need more attention.
For almost 9 years, we've been one of the most popular true crime podcasts out there.
We have over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, and our brand new YouTube channel has over 50,000 subscribers watching our full-length video episodes too.
So find and subscribe True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.